This is Brother Hanson from Truth, Life, Mysteries here in Lakeside, Arizona. It's good to be here with you today. We're going to get back into some of the old patriarchs and how they kept records of the Bible. You know, they didn't have paper and pencil. They didn't have anything to write with. The only thing they used was papyrus. And actually, Egypt come up with this papyrus. Papyrus no longer grows wild in Egypt, but for some 5,000 years it was plentiful. Enough to provide scribes with a dependable supply of writing material. You know, thousands of years ago, the papyrus plant, a type of reed, grew in abundance in the marshes of the Nile Delta. By the 4th millennium BC, Egyptians had learned to transform the 10 to 15 foot stalks of the plant into thin sheets that made a fine writing surface. Sheets were joined to form long strips for lengthy manuscripts, and they were rolled up as scrolls for storage. And this is how they recorded their history. As for the first lightweight, inexpensive, durable writing material, papyrus gained an importance in the history of the Bible that can hardly be overestimated. Many of the oldest surviving biblical documents, including some of the Dead Sea Scrolls, mind you, they were written on papyrus. Furthermore, it is from this reed that we derive the words paper and Bible. Did you know that? The Greeks called papyrus rolls, Biblia, if you can imagine. They called it Biblia, Bible. Referred to ancient Phoenicians, which referred to ancient Phoenician cities or of Byblos, an important seaport for the export of papyrus. In time, the word came to denote manuscripts and books, thus resulting in the word Bible, a term for the book. And ancient Egyptians started. They harvested this papyrus plant, turned it into this writing material, and used these steps. The stem of the harvested reed was divided into sections, usually between 12 and 18 inches long. The green outer rind was stripped off, exposing the soft white inner pith. While still fresh, the pith was cut lengthwise into strips. The strips were moistened with water until the pith softened to produce a natural gummy substance. Then the strips were laid out vertically on a hard surface with their edges touching or slightly overlapping. A second layer of strips was arranged horizontally over the first to cover with a cloth to absorb excess water. The gummy surface of the strips acted as a binding agent between the layers, so it's kind of stuck together to make a full page. Now, in order to consolidate to the two layers of the papyrus strips, they were pounded with a wooden mallet for an hour or more. Can you imagine that? pounded for an hour or more until the fibers broke down and matted together. Then the sheet was placed under a heavy weight and left to dry in the sun. The bonding of the two layers of fibers made the papyrus strong enough to use as a writing surface. So, there you go. The dry sheet was trimmed and its surface was smoothed with pumice and burnished with a shell, stone, piece of ivory. The side with the horizontal fibers was more carefully polished than the other. This was the side usually selected for writing. Although many papyrus documents were written on both sides, to actually save space and labor. The resulting creamy white sheets were attached end to end with flour paste. You ever made flour paste? Everybody's made that. Well, I don't know about nowadays, but when I was a kid, they made flour paste. Now, they made long links that were then rolled up as scrolls. The papyrus was rolled so that the vertical fibers, which had more give, were on the outside. The aid in the unrolling the scroll, dowels made of wood or stone were attached to the ends. That's how they rolled it up. The dowels were the going on the ends. So they could just roll it right up. And this is how they did their writing. Very interesting, to say the least. Now, we're getting into something, another patriarch, Moses. Moses was raised in the home of an Egyptian princess, but he was always aware of the plight of his people. He never lost his faith in God or in God's power to rescue them from bondage. Now, in 1570 BC, after 140 years of foreign domination, Egyptian warriors finally succeeded in driving their oppressors, the Hyksos, out of Egypt. Out of Egypt, and in the for a long while afterward, Egyptian rulers would have nothing to do with the delta region of the Nile, where the Hyksos had built their capital. The Hebrew settlements continued to prosper as they had before. But by the end of the 14th century BC, that situation began to change. Eventually, leading to the state of Hebrew bondage that existed when Moses came of age. The Bible does not name the Pharaoh who ruled Egypt at the time of the Exodus. An omission that some think may reflect the writer's lack of regard for Egyptian authority. I don't know. Many scholars believe, however, that the pharaoh in question was Ramesses II, who moved the seat of government from Thebes in Upper Egypt to the Delta. In making the move, Ramesses launched a vigorous building program on a monumental scale. His plans required unlimited materials for making bricks and a ready source of slave labor. Delta mud and Nile water served the first requirement admirably. The Hebrew population, whose prosperity offended the Pharaoh, actually, served the second. He could get the buildings he wanted and, at the same time, saddle the male Hebrew population with heavy labor. The Hebrews in bondage worked under a daily quota system that was inhumane in its demands. One scroll from the reign of Ramses II mentions 40 men, each of whose quota was 2,000 bricks each. Can you imagine that? 2,000 bricks a day. It mentions 40 men, each of whose quota was 2,000 bricks a day. How in the world could one man do 2,000 bricks a day? And an earlier record written on the wall of a tomb describes the Egyptian attitude toward their foreign slaves. The brickmaker is dirtier than vines or pigs from treading under its mud. He's simply wretched through and through. Men were beaten if they did not meet their quotas. But the Pharaoh's cruelty did not have the desired effect. The more they oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread, so that the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites. Exodus 1 and verse 12. The situation drove the Pharaoh to even harsher methods of reproach, and he twice demanded the lives of all male Hebrew babies. You remember that? He once wanted to kill every single one. What is it about the devil? He wants to kill all of the small children. Same thing. Abortion. Now, it was the second of these demands, death by drowning. That's what he wanted to do to these tiny babies. The Pharaoh wanted to kill them all. And a death by drowning was the sentence that first caused Moses to be singled out, rescued as an infant. He was raised within the Pharaoh's own household. Ironically, his knowledge of Egyptian court later contributed to making Moses a formidable opponent of the Pharaoh in power at the same time of the Exodus. Although Moses was raised apart from the Hebrew community, he nevertheless remained aware of how his people were treated. One day after Moses had grown up, he went out to his people and saw their forced labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own kinfolk. He looked this way and that to see if anyone would see him while he took vengeance on this Egyptian. And he killed him. He killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Exodus 2:11 and verse 12. Despite Moses' privileged upbringing, he championed the oppressed instinctively. It was an instinct that would later allow him to overcome his reluctance to lead and become a great leader. It's a powerful message. Well, I'm going to stop there, and maybe we'll take this up tomorrow. It's a very interesting book. I like this book. The Bible is a great history book as well. And the history of the Bible it gives us so much knowledge. Go to our website, krciradio.com. Leave us a message and let us know you're listening. krciradio.com. Call us at 928-368-6766. Leave a message. I will call you back. And write to us, KRCI Radio, Box 424, Lakeside, Arizona, 85929. Till tomorrow's broadcast, Brother Hanson saying, study to show yourself approved.